ahead and call the meeting to order. Roll call.
Commissioner Sinapa.
Here.
Commissioner Geary.
Here.
Commissioner Anderson.
Here.
Commissioner Blackburn.
Here.
Commissioner Taggart.
Here.
And Supervisor Perez.
Not here. All right. Okay, on to item B, approval of summary proceedings. We have two items. One is the July 18th minutes, which corrections were made. So we need to approve them as corrected. And then the second one is the August 15th, 2018 regular meeting. So if I can have some motion for the first one.
From what I can recollect, it looks fine.
All right. All in favor? Any opposed?
All right. But I do have to say, so Liz can hear this, that we had to rely on Commissioner Madigan to really go through this fine. Oh, just let you know, I'm reading it now thoroughly.
I was going to ask if any of you have read any of it.
Thanks, Liz.
All right, on to item two. Do I have any corrections, additions, changes? That's the case then.
So I make a motion to accept.
Okay, do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, so August is approved. On to item C, consent agenda. We have two items. We want to see the file.
I think you see the file.
All right, do I have a motion?
I'll second.
All right.
I'll make a motion.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Okay, on to public presentations. And before we start, I just wanted to acknowledge that we have our students here again, and we want to welcome you. Thank you for coming. Appreciate it. All right, so public presentations. This portion of the meeting is reserved for persons to address the commission on any matter not on this agenda, but under the jurisdiction of the commission. Commissioners may respond briefly to statements made or questions posed. There's no battery in it. They may ask a question for clarification, make a referral to staff for factual information, or request staff to report back to the commission at a later meeting. Also, the commission may act to direct the staff to place a matter of business on a future agenda. Please state your name and address for the record before making your presentation up here at the podium. Speakers are limited to 2 minutes, and I would ask everybody to please be sure that their phones are turned off or down, along with any other electronic devices, so you're not disturbing those that are talking. And please wait your turn to talk. All right, so we'll start on the first row. Gary, Joan, students, nothing. Second row, students. Third row. Okay, fourth row. Liz.
Thank you.
You're in no man's land over there, so.
I'm the end of the fourth
row. Pull it down. Hello. Liz Keough. Is this working?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Liz Keough, Chief Resident of the 5th Supervisorial District, 93305. In relation to the email that I sent in early September, I think the department needs to explain about the solicitation for applications for the subcommittee. Because there was a motion passed by this body to have a press release go out, to have it posted on the website. I checked the outlets I could, and I checked the website, and there was nothing about asking for applications. What distresses me about this is less the substance of the applications than the idea that your honorable commission passes a directive to the department and the department basically ignores it. So I would like some response as to when and where and how those solicitations were presented and if not, why they weren't.
Commission, I can answer that question. It was a mistake on the department's part. We didn't catch the recommendation from the commission to make it public. I had no issue doing that. If we hadn't dropped the ball, I would have happily made it public and any media that we saw fit.
Thank you. Okay. Fifth row. Anybody back there? Sixth row.
I came up here to challenge this commission and end the shelter. To help me understand how, in this day and age, when we are treating parvo, distemper, and other such diseases at the shelter, that a dog gets put down just because of ringworm. I'm baffled. I'm at a loss. I don't get it. Ringworm is something that is easily treatable, whether in the shelter or not. I understand ringworm is contagious, but to me there is absolutely no excuse for a dog to have to be put down because it has ringworm. And it wasn't a wild dog, it wasn't a feral dog, it was a beautiful, friendly, welcoming animal. And my heart is truly broken over this. You made a comment a couple meetings ago, you know, if you don't take them to the shelter, we don't know and we can't help them. Well, this is what happened when I took that dog to the shelter. It got put down for ringworm. I'm baffled. I really am. And I really need someone to help me understand this because, quite honestly, it makes me feel not wanting to bring any animals to that shelter again. I'm heartbroken over this. I really am. I don't get it. I mean, and why your staff didn't at least take, 30 seconds to call me and say, hey, you brought this dog in, it's got ringworm, we can't keep it, you have somebody that can pull it? I'd have gotten a rescue to pull that dog. I'd have put it in a crate on my patio if I had to and treated it myself. That's it. I just need an explanation. I need to understand this because I don't.
All right. We're directed to Director
Cohen. So I can answer. I mean, the shelter itself, or the staff at the shelter, does not have the authority to euthanize an animal prior to its stray hold, but a veterinarian does. So the county's veterinarian had examined the animal and had recommended euthanasia for the animal. It is correct that the dog...
I'm sorry, I can't hear what he's saying.
So the dog that Ms. Richardson is talking about came in, was examined on intake and had some hair loss. It was black-lighted, as they call it. It was determined that the dog had ringworm. It is a common practice for the shelter to euthanize cats with ringworm, simply, unless we can find foster for it, simply because it is a zoonotic illness and it is contagious to human beings. I agree with Ms. Richardson that it is a treatable illness, but while the animal's under treatment, it's contagious to humans. So our veterinarian made that decision, which she's in her legal right to do, based on the risk to the human interaction with that animal over its stray hold period.
Okay, I understand that, but there are also precautions to take when you treat ringworm. And I'm well aware of that. And you know, I work for CPS and I've dealt with a lot of different issues. And ringworm is one of them, you know, scabies and all that kind of stuff. And there are ways to take precautions, wearing gloves and other things to minimize anybody else catching it. What I was told was they had no way to quarantine it.
So to answer your question, you're correct. I agree with you that, like I said, ringworm is a treatable illness. The decision was made by our veterinarian, like I said, based on the fact that that is a zoonotic illness and puts the staff and the people that come to the shelter at risk. It is correct to say we do not have a quarantine area to protect human zoonotic illnesses. And again, it was a decision that was made by a licensed veterinarian to put that animal down, and it was based on the fact that it did have ringworm.
Okay, Okay, so let me ask you this. Is there going to be a protocol change in the future because of that? Because, again, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
I don't accept the decision. I still find it unacceptable because just because of what it was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because I also think of here, what if somebody came in here right now and goes, okay, who in here's got a critical disease? Your number's up today because we can't quarantine you. You know, to me, it's the same thing. So my concern is what in the future is going to be done to possibly prevent this.
So to answer your question, nobody at the shelter can override a licensed veterinarian's decision to euthanize an animal or keep an animal for that matter, or treat an animal. We're not doctors. She is. So in the future, I can't override.
The commission can recommend to the board of supervisors that, hey, this is a situation that came up. That, you know, what are our options for diverting something like this in the future?
Well, let me finish, Ms. Richardson. So there's nothing that anybody can do to take away the authority that a doctor has to make that decision. No. There's nothing that anybody can do other than the state of California, I suppose, reworking what obligations and legal authority a licensed veterinarian has. Now, when I found out about the situation, I spoke to the shelter supervisor and the veterinarian about it, and I got their input on it. To be honest with you, we practice that commonly with cats. We just simply because we have no way to keep it from spreading through the animal population and the human population. And that's the major concern, is that it can spread to zoonotic illnesses. Now, you know, I know that we have in the past, we've had animals that have come in, not usually dogs. We don't see ringworm in dogs too often, or at least we don't recognize it often. Just the logistics of finding it in cats makes it a little bit simpler. They're smaller creatures, it's easier to see. So we've had some conversations about what to do in the future when an animal has ringworm, but to be honest with you, unless we had, which we do, but not as robust as we need it, if we had a core of volunteers that could take on cases like that, communicable illnesses, zoonotic illnesses, then we could usher those animals out to fosters. But as far as keeping those animals in the shelter, it's a danger to the human population and the animal population. So we've had several conversations about how to address those things in the future. I mean, we're treating, like you said, parvo, we're treating distemper, we're treating just about every illness under the sun, but sort of the compounding factor is when it is an illness that can transfer to humans, whether it be treatable or not. That's the defining factor. But, you know, we have had some conversations about it, simply because I literally in 12 years at Animal Services and almost 8 years managing a shelter or the department, I've never had a dog presented with ringworm within its stray hole. So it was one of those things that we've never seen before. You know, I've even gone so far as to say, well, you know, if the animal had, you know, identifying information on it and it had an owner, we have to have a common practice so that we don't put a dog down, especially that we know has an owner in the community, and find a way to find it a temporary holding place where it can't spread that disease to human beings. So, you know, I heard about the story. I questioned it myself. At the end of the day, I can't question a veterinarian's decision to put an animal down, but I can question how we can work together as an organization to figure out a different solution in the future.
Right. And I would think it's going to be well that happens. And I've discussed with you before, you know, there are things that I would like to volunteer for, and I would be more than happy at any point in time if the dog has something simple as bringing to bring it to my house and treat it. I got no issues with that.
Okay, well, then I'll have you work with Nick on that.
I have your volunteer application, Susan.
Yeah.
And
probably at the bottom of the pile.
No, it's actually at the top. But if you'd like, I don't know if you filled out a foster application. I think you have because you had one of them.
Yeah, because I still have her.
So I will have a conversation.
About that separately.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll have a conversation with Dr. Wilson that we have at least one foster parent who's willing to take zoonotic illness animals. And we do see them occasionally, not usually in dogs, but it's something that we can definitely look into.
All right.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. All righty. Next row? Or anybody on that row left?
I just have a question about, I know that when I brought in pictures of dogs, like the dead dogs or the puppies that were being sold within a week, or there was a run where I brought in a bunch of pictures of dogs that didn't hit the shelter that we got rescue. And you guys, I don't know what it's called, you guys file it, you guys agree, and then you file it.
Receive and file.
What happens to them from there? Like, does anyone, the supervisor, see them, or do they just...
They're in... The director has them in his file. We maintain all of our records as well.
So if I want the supervisors to see something like that, would that be something I bring to their meeting? I didn't know if you guys passed them on. Yeah. Okay, so I would.
Janice?
Okay. I didn't know what that meant.
Jared, we'll have the...
If you want the supervisors to see them, the easiest way to do it is to take it to the clerk of the board's office on the 5th floor.
Oh.
And they will do a receive and file.
Oh, perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Anybody else back there?
I can't see you.
All righty. If that's it, then that concludes public presentations. Thank you. All right. On to staff announcements.
Good evening. I wanted to start out by recapping, in case anybody's not aware, that we had the second meeting of the Animal Services Ordinance Review Subcommittee. That was this afternoon. Started about 3:05, thanks to me being 2 minutes late, making copies. And we had a good discussion, a lively discussion, until probably about 4:45 or so. So we're taking little pieces of things at a time. I think I mentioned at the last meeting that we didn't actually have a meeting, but I spoke that our first subcommittee meeting was more along the lines of introductions and kind of stating what each subcommittee member wanted to see accomplished out of that. And then today we just started taking a bite out of some of those issues. We addressed several issues today, got a lot of good input. Like I said, had lively conversation. And we are working with, there's been some homework, it's been assigned. I think we have agreed to meet since next, which by the way, the commission should probably consider, just throwing that out there. Next commission meeting falls the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. So we typically have our subcommittee meetings the day of, so we changed that date to November 14th for the next subcommittee meeting. Just throwing that out there. Ultimately, I don't know if this is the forum for, but Liz, are you able to let me know if everybody can keep Sue Bennett in their prayers? Sue Bennett is the director of Parent Meeting Society.
No, she's a spay neuter voucher director.
Sue Bennett is, she's been active in animal welfare for well beyond
40 years.
And she's just the nicest, kindest lady in the world. She really cares about animals in our community, like all of us do in this room. From what I understand, she's ill. If everybody could keep her in their prayers. I've also been informed that maybe you might not know, but Mr. Bob Rutledge is also has taken ill too. Bob Rutledge is somebody who's also been very vocal in the past and very supportive of animal welfare in Kern County, has himself cared for tons of stray kittens and dogs and has donated to shelter before. And, please also take it on. Everybody can keep coming in the as well. On the business, Animal Services has been busy of late. Our kitten nursery has been open now for about 2 months. I'm going to give you approximate numbers, so I don't have in front of me. We put about 60 kittens through the nursery, which includes the ones that are currently in there. About 40 of those 60 have either graduated through the program or been adopted and are currently up for adoption. We're still trying to tweak some of the program a little bit here and there because we only have really 2 paid staff members and a group of volunteers who are trying to provide care to 24, 25 kids at any time. We're trying to have medical staff there as often as we can. But I mean, the end all be all is that even so far, There's been a number of kids that have made it out of the nursery and progressed through hopefully a forever home where they would have survived before. So I think it's been successful so far. Adoptions, 557 animals went to new families in August. 357 animals went to adoption in September. We do typically see a decrease in overall intake. I do say typically. In overall intake and outcomes in the months of October, November, December. Year-to-date, 4,345 animals have been adopted. 13 cats adopted from Petco locations. Just throwing this out there, you know, Jeff, our volunteer coordinator, is not here today. He's been off duty for about 3 months. He just came back on last week, and the deputy director and I have tried to do the best we could to cobble together volunteer schedules. It's a little more complicated than we thought, but we're also revamping the volunteer program, trying to make it a little bit easier for people to come on board, trying to make it a little bit more beneficial for people to stay, increase our retention rate of volunteers, and just trying to make it an easier, simpler process and more enjoyable process for volunteers. So in that, we've, thanks to the Best Friends Animal Society, have procured a programmer to manage the volunteers and the scheduling of it so that it can be more automated, it's easier to track. So we're incorporating all of that with new sign-in and sign-out procedures, and we just had our first orientation with the new process last Saturday. I gave the orientation. And I think I received about 25 applications, and 4 people showed up for an orientation, which in my opinion is a win. With 4 new volunteers starting, which is good. But the reason I bring that up is because we literally run short on volunteers to tend to our cats that are in Petco. Typically, we depend on 2 or 3 volunteers to visit both Petco locations to provide early morning cleaning for those animals. And if anybody knows of anybody willing to accept the volunteer position just to clean those Petco cats daily, it would be greatly appreciated, because when we don't have staff or volunteers, we can't send cats out to Petco. Moving on, in August, we had 2 adoption promotions, which includes our $5 Friday. We continue to base our adoption promotions on the population that we have at the time. Our rescue program saw 152 animals placed in the month of August, 109 animals placed in the month of September. Our foster program continues to be a success. In August alone, 102 animals entered the foster care program. In September, 160 animals entered the foster care program. That 160 is a little bit more than usual. That's because of the nursery. At least I think it's because of the nursery. Those are animals that are progressing from the nursery into foster homes in the period between they get their surgery for spaying. TNR, our check and release program, keeps going strong. Through the implementation of the program, 7,863 cats have been altered through the track and release program. Those were probably 7,863 cats that would have otherwise been put down. Our calls for service, 1,232 calls for service in August, 1,168 calls for service received in September. Ms. Keogh will be either happy or not happy to know that her stomping grounds have led to our calls for service in both August and September. 20 dogs were returned to their owners in the field in the month of August by animal control officers, 12 returned to their owners in September, 51 dogs secured on property in the month of August, and 60 in September. Last but not least, we are on pace this year. If you look at the euthanasia numbers, the last page, euthanasia comparison, we're on pace to reduce our euthanasia by about 1,200 animals from last year to this year. That's a good thing. The year before, we reduced it by about 1,000. From fiscal year 15-16, from 16-17, we reduced it by about 1,000. And then from fiscal year 16-17 to 17-18, we reduced by about another 1,200. All the work that everybody's doing in this room and beyond, this is awesome. You know, I mean, I know that we have a long way to go, but the fact that the county shelter that takes in the most animals, many municipal shelter, 87 square miles, has been able to reduce euthanasia by 1,200 animals. It's just a testament to what the community is doing. With that, I can answer any questions that you may have.
I just want to let you know, I was at PetSmart the other day on Main, and they said that they're looking for rescues or somebody to put animals in there. I don't know if that's something you're interested in, or if we can let rescues know in the back, maybe they have somebody.
Yeah, I know, just for everybody's information, that typically the local PetSmart and Petco stores really don't hone in on our Petco stores. But PetSmart stores, they do ask nonprofits to come in and bring adoptable animals, usually on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. I don't know what their requirements are. I don't know if they require 501c3s. They may require you to be a 501c3. I know the Bakersfield Boxers and the breeds usually participate in them, too. And then, to be honest with you, from what I understand, especially from, I think there's a PetSmart out on Callaway, and there are some organizations that bring out large breed dogs and they get adopted. So we've actually been in communication with them, but it's just a logistical problem for us to have people take away from cleaning the shelter and send them out offsite. Although I will say that the last two Saturdays we've held offsite events. Like two Saturdays ago, we had a Fox Theater event that went very well. I think Commissioner Duda was there. It was a Popovich pet theater, a comedy pet theater. It was a Fox Theater. We had a little event, brought out some adoptable animals. All of those animals ended up being rescued after that. It was good. And then we had another adoption event at Camping World just this past Saturday, and we brought out maybe six or seven dogs, and two of them got adopted, which is pretty good. So we're trying to do more of those things. And Sally and I, with the revamping the volunteer program, we're trying to provide a group of core volunteers to just manage those offsite adoption events because they're successful. Any other questions?
I have a question.
Hang on.
A couple of observations. I was wondering on the adoptions for Petco, there were none for September. Is it because you didn't have any to give them? Is that the reason?
No, I didn't have anybody to clean them. Okay, I was just saying, I literally don't have any volunteers to send out to the local
Petco. Okay.
Petco will only take the cats from us if we clean them every morning. Okay. So we have to have staff or volunteers out at the Petco location when they open it to clean them first thing in the morning, give them food, water, check on their health, and then leave. If we don't have that, then they can't take cats. So we literally haven't had a core of volunteers to be in there since August.
Since August. That was my first observation.
No, we very rarely have a shortage of cats.
Okay.
It's not the supply problem.
And I know, like in the spring, there you didn't have cats to give them, which was a good problem to have, and that was great. Went through the numbers on the cat euthanasia. I mean, it's dropped from the same period last year, about 48%, which is huge. So everybody knows we don't read these, you need to look at it because this is really, we're seeing history happen right before our eyes on getting to no kill. And on the dogs dropped 23%. So it's huge. Overall percentages for this time last year, we were saving about 66%. And Nick made the point last year that he wasn't sure how he was going to step it up and how we're going to get to the next level. And, it's just doing all these other pieces of the puzzle better is really how you do it. And he's been innovative in doing marketing is probably one of the big reasons. And people are becoming more aware of it. But our numbers this year, just so everybody knows, we went from 66% on the save rate to 76%, which is a big increase. So I want to give the department, everybody, a lot of credit for that. That's a big improvement. And then, yeah, on the euthanasia, you're right about saving about 1,200. That's a lot. So, anyway, great job. Thank you.
Sounds like you're running low on volunteers. And how exactly do you get the word out there on what's available? You've got all these people back there to tap into. Anybody back there want to clean cages at Petco? I don't know. You know, what's the program in the schools where you get credit for?
ROP,
I was just trying to think because you really do need the help, and Petco, is a great thing to have, and unfortunately, you can't do it right now. So how do you get the word out on what's available and what they're able to do?
Are you talking about, like, marketing the volunteer program?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're in the process of trying to put together a marketing strategy for the volunteer program. We've talked about open houses once or twice a month. We're actually developing a recruitment strategy for the volunteer program. The supplemental program, the program that you're talking about, the RRP program, we take advantage of that. The problem is there's usually some stipulations on those programs where there has to be a work site location that's managed by the organization. So we'd be sending a pet coach. Complicates things a bit.
Right.
Like we have employment preparation program workers, like the Mexican American Opportunity Foundation workers, and they come in. They have to usually be on site, and I can't send them off unless I provide transportation, which then complicates things even more. But yeah, I mean, again, it's a relatively small room, but there's a lot of people in here that maybe haven't been in this room before. And if you're interested in volunteering, go to kerncountyanimalservices.org. There's a volunteer application on the page. You can fill it out, email it, fax it, hand deliver it to me, send me an email. I'll sign you up and put you through an orientation myself.
Do you take them to dinner, too?
No, I don't think so. I don't know. It depends how many bad
There's 10. There's 10.
He's on his.
You got two questions.
Anything else from the commission?
I was just wondering if since last meeting, and a lot of people were here, maybe if you can kind of just give a brief synopsis of what the distemper outbreak that you guys experienced and the progress of that today.
Yeah. So I don't have the statistics in front of me, but I think when all was said and done, we had upwards of 40-some-odd cases of distemper that came up positive. It was over about a three-week time span, maybe a month time span. Amazingly enough, I think we were able to find positive live outcomes for over half of those animals through foster, thank you, Ms. Richardson, foster, rescue, and an adoption, really, foster to adopt. So in years past, you know, if you do the research, there's shelters that sometimes completely depopulate an entire shelter. We did not want to do that for obvious reasons, so we managed it as best we could. Dr. Wilson and her team have been randomly testing animals just about every week since then. Since the large portion where she was testing, you know, 17 animals and they were all coming back positive, the last group of testing she sent out, the only ones that came up positive were the ones that were currently in foster and had been in the shelter at the time of the outbreak. So we don't have anything currently in the shelter that has distemper. We have been testing and haven't found anything with distemper. However, we are still seeing animals presented at intake with active distemper. We had one that just came in last week from Arvin that was actively spreading jet meal. So it's just something to be concerned of. And actually, before I call on you, I see your hand. Before I call on you, on that issue of distemper and vaccinations, if anybody's not aware, you know, we started in June of this year. We had a free parvo distemper vaccine clinic at Heritage Park. And then we had in September three consecutive no-cost parvo distemper clinics at the shelter. That was completely funded by the Friends of the Kern County Animal Foundation, and that money was exhausted. Thanks to some members of the community, like Bakersfield Boxers and Billy Reeves, I think, and Basic Needs Foundation. There were some organizations that donated money to the Basic Needs Foundation in order to provide free vaccinations. We are not involved in it. That's Basic Needs, and I believe they're setting up some clinics with some help from some of the local rescues. But the Heigl Foundation had contacted us and gave us $10,000 to purchase free vaccinations so that we could continue doing free vaccination clinics every Wednesday, actually every Saturday clinic we do too. So really for the next 3 months or so, it's tough to say depending on how many vaccines we give out, for at least the next 3 months, we still have free vaccinations for parvo distemper available at the county shelter or clinics. And whereas when we first started talking about it, the response was immense. We had a lot of people coming in to get those vaccinations and starting to dwindle. So we're trying to do our best to keep getting the word out there that just because the outbreak has been managed does not mean that it has to be continued and sustained. So in your daily interactions you come across people that don't have a vaccination, or don't even know if they have a vaccination, send them to our shelter. We don't care if you're city or county or you live on Mars. Send them to the shelter and we'll vaccinate them from heart to stomach for free, no cost.
And that's only for owner dogs, right? Not like if somebody finds a stray and they're concerned that they haven't had a shot. Owner dogs can come in and...
I mean, that's what it was intended for, but I don't really care. You can come in with a dog you just found and I'll vaccinate it.
Okay, just one more.
Well,
wait.
Somebody in the back first.
I just wanted to add to that. I mean, you don't check like IDs or, you know, because you're not checking for licenses or anything for these dogs, so there's no like repercussions for somebody.
I mean, we're more than likely going to capture an identification of somebody that comes to our facility. Hopefully, you're not reticent to hand over your ID, but there's no charge. We don't care where you're from. So, and we're not requiring you to purchase a license at the time. We will vaccinate the animal, regardless.
Is there an age requirement to volunteer?
16.
Have you guys tried hitting up the high schools?
Say again?
Have you guys tried hitting up the high schools since they have to do community service to graduate?
That is part of our recruitment strategy, is including sending out some invitations to all the schools in the area.
It might help educate kids, too, just on, you know, responsibility of getting your animal spayed, neutered, vaccinated, the whole nine yards. You know, the younger that we can educate the kids, the better.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because I like to believe that of all the positive change, I know there's a lot of negative, but there's a lot of positive change in our community, Kern County. There's so many factors that have contributed to that. But one of the small ones, I think, is our volunteer program and the volunteers, people that are volunteering for local rescues, getting involved so that they see the problems that are existing in the community. It seems like once people get their eyes on it and really see it, they're more motivated to be involved and spread the word.
Yeah,
thank you for that suggestion.
I've got one more observation. You were interviewed about 2.5 years ago when Nathan Winograd came to town on no kill and how we'd get there, and you said the numbers would never go up until you could stem the tide of the intake. And what I noticed on this month's comparison statistics were, compared to last year, you had 822 fewer cats brought in and 561 fewer dogs. I think it's great. And that's really what it's going to take, is to lower the intake. But can you comment on maybe why there is fewer?
Commissioner Blackburn, 500 less animals than we did last year. 500 less dogs than we did last year is fantastic, but I don't know that that's enough to draw any conclusions to. I mean, we've had fluctuations year over year back in the early days of my tenure where you can say it was just the ebb and flow of intake. I think it would take a longer period of time to see a decrease year over year in overall intake to be able to say, yes, something's happening.
I think it's great.
There's no way for me to answer. I mean, it could be, 500 less dogs. Sounds like it could very well be the help of the people that are in this room right now saving dogs on the street that otherwise would have came to the shelter. But it's tough to say what the cause of it is. Either way, it's a good thing.
Anyway, we'll take it, right?
Yeah. 500 less dogs is 500 less dogs. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Madam Chairman, motion to receive and file.
Right, can I have a motion? I make a motion to receive and file.
I'll second.
All in favor? Any opposed? All righty. Next.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about where we are on spay neuter for the current fiscal year. There's a couple more of the reports back there if you're interested, sitting on the table. We are off to a reasonably good start. We've got 3 months into the fiscal year on spay and neuter. We're just under 25% expended already, so we're right on track. We got a state food and agricultural grant in the amount of $15,000. Which we've just about fully utilized in the community of Lamont. And we're moving along. We're doing what we do. Nothing too exciting about this today. Okay. Any questions? Good. All right.
Okay, if I can have a motion.
I'll make a motion.
All in favor? Any opposed? All right. On to my left, commissioner announcements or reports. I'll start with Commissioner Chagas. Commissioner Blackburn?
I don't have any reports, but everybody that's here from BC or Cal State, please raise your hands. Got quite a few. So what classes are that you're taking where they're putting us on your list of?
Political science.
Political science, okay. And is it one teacher or is it a couple of them that are? Is it one teacher? Everybody have the same teacher?
A couple of them.
Well, I see the teacher get here. That would be neat. Tell the teacher he or she is invited to come here because we like to see all the participation. You guys are learning about civics and how we work as a community, you know, firsthand. So, anyway, welcome. And we're glad you're here. That's all I
got. All right, thank you. Commissioner Geary?
Looking at work on this message.
You got nothing? I got nothing. Okay, moving on. All right, old business. Staff referrals, none. Livestock, and
okay. Okay, this is for you, County Council. Geary.
Hello.
Yes.
I was asking her a question.
Three
sorry.
People asking me stuff at once. Yes, they received and filed the spay neuter report.
We did.
Okay. Just checking.
Yes.
Okay. We did.
We did.
Okay.
Okay.
And
so
your question was?
My question is, I would like to remove the livestock containment subcommittee. It's going to roll into the ordinance change subcommittee. So how do I have that?
Motion to remove it from the agenda.
I make a motion to remove the livestock containment subcommittee from the agenda.
I'll second.
All in favor? Any opposed? Okay, so be it. All right, on to item two, the ordinance change subcommittee. Now we know your next meeting is 11:14.
We have a really good group, a lot of different opinions, but everyone seems to mesh really well. Nick is taking the lead on it, kind of giving us all direction on what we're going to be looking into. And he did get homework assignments. But I think it's going to move along fairly quickly. Not when it gets into the revision, the actual going out to county council and all that. That probably won't be quick. But there's just cause. But we're taking off, like Nick said, little bites at a time to try to get through all of this. And it's making a lot of sense, and I appreciate the documentation that you put together. That was helpful.
I think Nick has been doing a really good job kind of ushering us through all of the ordinances, and it's been a good experience trying to figure out where we can make some effective changes to make things a little bit more clearer for the public, and I think we're going to get there pretty quickly, most likely. It's going to take a while to draft it.
Get through the red tape and all that.
All right. Well, we appreciate you guys being on it and managing things. Sounds like things are going well.
And the other volunteers are. Thank you for the new volunteers that are also attending that part of that.
Awesome. All righty. That's it for all business. Okay. On to new business. We got none. All right. So I guess the only thing we have left is adjournment. However, I think we need to discuss the dates. Falls the day before our Thanksgiving. So the question is, do we go ahead and have a meeting? Or do we go dark?
I thought we should have a 14th as same as
can we do that?
Jared, it's a question for you.
Yes, you can do that. I will not be able to attend on the 14th.
Okay. So that would be a big question mark.
It's normally dark if you say.
Right. We could have a meeting in December.
You have a number of options. You have to give 45 days notice on changing a meeting date. So you could actually have the December meeting and the November meeting the first week of December, kind of combine it together. That might get you through the holidays a little bit easier.
Oh, wow.
So we have to do a 45-day notice on changing the dates?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We have 45 days.
Well, if we, yeah, we want to change November.
Yeah, what she's saying is to bring it to the first December.
So we can combine, maybe.
And you can cancel a meeting without 45
yeah,
days notice.
Yeah, we can cancel the meeting. That's not a problem.
He's going to be on Thursday.
Wednesday.
Sorry. Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, also one, two, three. I mean, our normal December meeting would be on the 19th.
Yeah. So let's try the 12th.
If I could just make a point that I just heard Ms. Kant bring up, we also have to make sure this room is available.
Yes. Yeah.
So
right.
Whatever date you set
we have
may be tentative. Yes.
I mean, could we realistically?
Well, you only have to post 72 hours ahead of time.
Right. But we have to make the decision.
Yeah.
Well, we could tentatively go for that date pending the availability of the room.
Yeah.
And county council on the 12th.
Sorry. I just go where they tell me.
I'm going to miss out on the whole TV.
And we're talking December 12th, correct?
Yep. Correct.
I can find someone to cover for me.
Okay.
Okay. I have a hearing that day that's going to start at 8.
Oh, so. God. Okay. Yeah. All right. So I guess the question is, do we want to make a motion to tentatively, basically we're going dark in November and then tentatively schedule both meetings to be held in December?
I make that motion that we go dark in November and have it on the 12th, tentatively.
I second that. Okay. November and December, because it's, well,
it's combined.
Combined.
Yeah, combined both.
Okay. All in favor?
So, real quick, I just...
Oh, okay.
And this is maybe a question for Jerry. So if they set a date for the next meeting tentatively for December 12th, and for some reason I can't reserve the room and it needs to be changed, how do all the people in a room get notified of that?
Well, nobody should count on the meeting being specifically on the 12th until the agenda is posted.
So they'd all have
you
to...
You could put a note on your website, mm-hmm. and
Facebook
everybody could
or...
check the website. But you don't have to finalize anything until the agenda is posted.
Okay, so once we finalize... You guys looking for the 12th, we'll find out if that date's... I don't see why it wouldn't be. It's
right.
6 o'clock at night and there's nothing happening in this building. At least I don't think. So as long as that... If the date's not okay and we need to change it, we'll communicate, get the date decided on, and then we'll publicize it on our Facebook page and our website.
And it'll be posted here.
And it'll be posted here at least within 72 hours of the meeting.
All right.
Just so everybody knows.
Okay. Got a referral?
So
okay.
Motion is second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Okay. So then we just have adjournment. Do we have a motion?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thank you. Have a great evening. Let's talk a bit.